KALW.
When we talk about older adults 65 and up, one of the opportunities is to think about older adults in all of our communities.
California has ramped up its vaccinations and is averaging about 1 million doses a week. But community advocates worry speed could bypass equity.
It's like for the sake of speed and data and volume, we're going to cut off smaller providers who serve really vulnerable populations because we think another health system can vaccinate them better.
Plus, a new show on KALW explores the backstory behind today's news headlines.
That war that's happening in the Middle East, what are its consequences? Where did it come from? What role do we play in it? Because in order to be a responsible person living in this world, I think you need that information, at least to be able to make sound decisions.
We'll talk to the hosts of NPR's history podcast, Throughline. That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. As counties across California speed up their vaccinations, the state is sticking to its guideline to give out doses primarily based on age. But there are some rollout changes in the weeks ahead, and a question is emerging. How are counties and the state making sure shots are distributed equitably? KALW's health reporter Angela Johnston is following the developments, and she joins me for another vaccination update. Hey, Angela.
Hi, Hannah. So I actually have a bit of good news to start off our conversation.
Thank you. What is it?
Well, COVID-19 cases across California are steadily decreasing. Take last week, for example. On Saturday, the state reported about 6,700 new COVID cases. And that may sound like a lot, but compare that to a month ago. That number was around 20,000.
Right.
So it's gone down in the Bay Area, too. Mm-hmm. And it definitely doesn't mean we should be letting our guard down, but the state says some of the decrease could have to do with the vaccine.
Okay, so Angela, where are we right now with vaccinations?
Well, counties are vaccinating a lot more people than they were a few months ago. It was quite a rocky start, and it took the state over a month to vaccinate its first 1 million people. And now it's averaging about 1 million shots a week. And to give more context, California has received over 9 million doses, and it's given out about 7.5 million of them. And if we zoom in locally, in San Francisco, for example, as of last Friday, more than half of folks ages 65 and up have received one dose. Mm-hmm. But scarcity is still an issue. There are way more people that want and are eligible for vaccinations than are doses available. So much so that San Francisco had to shut down one of its mass vaccination sites at Moscone Center last week. They'll open it back up when they have more vaccines.
Right. We saw the lines and lines of people outside San Francisco General Hospital over the weekend. They said they were waiting some up to 4 hours for vaccines. So that's happening.
Oh, wow.
Speaking of eligibility, can you recap which groups are eligible right now in California? Is it still just folks 65 and up?
Yes. And also if you work in education, food and agriculture, or emergency services, you're able to get a vaccine in most counties beginning this week. California is actually going to be reserving some doses specifically for teachers starting in March with the hopes of speeding up school reopening. Mm-hmm. But the newest announcement is that people with specific underlying conditions and disabilities will be the next group prioritized in the state's guidelines.
And that's regardless of their age?
Yeah, regardless of age. Beginning March 15th, healthcare providers are allowed to use their own clinical judgment to vaccinate people ages 16 to 64 who are considered the highest risk to get really sick from COVID-19.
Like who?
Like, those conditions range from cancer to chronic kidney disease, severe obesity and type 2 diabetes. Pregnancy is also on the list. Mm-hmm. Or, and this is important, maybe a person doesn't have an underlying condition on the list, but you're in at least one of three situations. Mm-hmm. When you have a developmental or other high-risk disability where you'd be severely at risk of dying from a COVID-19 infection. Or two, COVID would limit your ability to get crucial ongoing care. Like, say, you wouldn't be able to go to a dialysis clinic.
Okay.
And finally, your disability would make it hard for you to get adequate and timely care if you got COVID.
And that's a big change, right? There was a lot of frustration from the disability community when the state announced the age-based requirements.
Yeah, there was. I actually spoke to Nikki Brown Booker days before the change was announced. She's a disability rights advocate and has a physical disability. She has 6 caregivers who come into her house on a regular basis.
For me, the issue is that I don't have a choice but to have people come into my home to provide care. So I can't really shelter in place like the way someone else could shelter in place.
So, Angela, how is the community responding to this change?
Well, I think they're glad the state listened, but are still worried that some people with disabilities may face big barriers to vaccination. There's the challenges of getting a doctor's note to prove you're high risk. There's also transportation concerns, and advocates hope that counties will find ways to organize accessible rides or start home-based vaccinations for people who can't leave their house.
And we've heard so many stories about how hard it is to just sign up for an appointment in general.
Right. Yeah. Some have compared it to winning the lottery or trying to get tickets to a concert. And this should be getting easier, but there's also an equity issue. Right now, a lot of people standing in those lines are white. The state released county-by-county demographics of who has received a vaccine, and there are equity gaps. For instance, about 16% of the vaccine doses so far have gone to people who identify as Latinx, but 39% of the people in the state identify that way. Mm. And then about 3% of vaccine doses statewide have gone to Black Californians, but they make up around 6% of the state's population. And there's a lot of different reasons for that explanation, but the state needs to address it.
Right. And we've talked about that before on Cross Currents in terms of reaching out to Black communities. And Angela, that seems especially problematic given that the pandemic is really disproportionately affecting Black and Latinx communities. So what are some solutions that you're hearing?
At the last Community Vaccine Advisory meeting, Surgeon General Nadine Burke-Harris talked about a few things. One is just different types of outreach. Meeting people where they're at and using trusted messengers like pastors or community health workers to address vaccine hesitancy or just to help somebody sign up for an appointment. Mm-hmm. The other thing, the state is employing a priority system. It'll direct more vaccine doses to certain geographic areas that are underserved and hardest hit by COVID, and would likely include places with more people of color. Also, the state is rolling out a vaccine appointment website called myturn.ca.gov. Built into it is a way to prioritize certain groups by providing specific community organizations, say like La Clinica, with access codes that their constituents and only their constituents can use to reserve a vaccine appointment.
Okay, some progress around equity. What are advocates saying?
Yeah, some say these changes aren't happening fast enough, and that the state needs to make sure equity is being addressed first and foremost in the older adult population, people who are eligible for the vaccine right now, right this second. Here's Denny Chan with the group Justice in Aging.
When we talk about older adults 65 and up, I think one of the opportunities is to think about older adults in all of our communities. Right. So that we're thinking about, race equity advocates who are pushing for, prioritization of farm workers. Right. Well, some of those farm workers are older adults themselves. Some of them live with older adults in multi-generation households. So, by prioritizing older adults who we know have a higher death rate and a higher chance of being seriously sick, we also end up prioritizing people in all these different communities.
Angela, anything else we should know right now?
Yes, one more thing, and it's a bit complicated, so I'll try to be simple. But Blue Shield, the insurance company, is now going to be coordinating the vaccine distribution for the state and counties as something called a third-party administrator.
What does that mean?
The idea is that the distribution will be more centralized, efficient, and hopefully more equitable if it's organized by one entity. Blue Shield will pick which providers, doctors' offices, and hospitals they'll partner with. But the fear is that because Blue Shield is trying to speed things up as fast as possible, they may not prioritize small community clinics that may only serve a few thousand patients, so wouldn't be vaccinating that many people, in favor of giving vaccines to these big mass sites like Oakland Coliseum.
And then that goes back to the issue of equity then.
Right. The small community clinics are often located in underserved communities. Providers there speak multiple languages usually, And some providers worry that by trying to speed things up, we're going to be ignoring places that could be really crucial in making sure more Latinx and Black Californians get vaccinated. Here's Andy Martinez with the California Primary Care Association.
It's like, for the sake of speed and data and volume, we're saying we're going to cut off smaller providers who serve really vulnerable populations because we think another health system can vaccinate them better. Just right, like with all the everything that we know about vaccines and the hesitancy and the concerns, why you would cut us off doesn't make any sense.
This is all so complicated, Angela.
This is all happening really quickly. And this week, the Central Valley will switch to the Blue Shield administration. So we'll make sure to post links to vaccination signups and trackers and just continue to update as things change.
Okay. Thank you, Angela.
Thanks, Hannah.
Angela Johnston is KALW's health reporter. Find more of her stories and all our vaccine updates at KALW.org.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. One of my favorite podcasts is now a show on KELW, Throughline. It's a show produced by NPR and has so far been a hit as a history podcast, but it's not the kind of podcast with hosts just interviewing historians. The team at Throughline take a current event or news item that's on people's minds, and then they go back in time to trace how we got here. Whether it's culture, politics, or food, they explore the backstory, tracing events to their origins and how they first began. I talked to the hosts of Throughline, Rund Abdelfattah and Ramtin Arablouei.
Ramtin, you know, he got to NPR and I had been there for a few years and we didn't talk for a few months, actually. Like, he kind of sat in this corner. He was working on this secret new project that would become how I built this. And then one day, like, we struck up conversation, I think at the lunch table. And then we were just off. Like, we were just talking about, you know, politics and religion. And, you know, Ramtin grew up in an Iranian-American household. And I grew up in a Palestinian-American household. And, you know, and he comes from a Shia Muslim background. I come from a Sunni Muslim background. So there was a lot of fodder for conversation and debate there. And one of the things we kept, like, running into is our frustration with how the Middle East is covered and how a lot of these issues, like the Sunni-Shia conflict, are covered in the media, and how basically that there isn't enough time to give the kinds of context that you really need to understand these really complicated and nuanced issues. And so as we were thinking about that, we were also, you know, we're podcast producers and we're kind of looking around and we're like, we're not finding this.
Ramtin, what did you know you did want to do and what did you know you did not want to do with this podcast?
We knew we wanted to make a show that was fun to listen to. That was the number one thing. We wanted it to be something people enjoyed. Because as Rund said, traditionally people associate history with suffering in terms of the learning process, like in terms of what the experience was in high school or college. So that's the number one thing. We knew that it needed to be entertaining and immersive. And we wanted it kind of be a playground for us as producers and sound designers to really play and have a good time with it. We also knew we wanted it to be story focused. We wanted it to be about the people who experience history. And we talked to a lot of experts, but our goal is a lot of times to take you to the narrative biography, basically, of the people we're encountering along the way. So those are things we knew we did want it to be. What we didn't want it to be was dry. We wanted to avoid being dry. There were a lot of history podcasts, and this is no shade. It's just we didn't want to do something where it's just Rund and I talking for like an hour or 2 hours. We wanted to mix in archival tape experts. We wanted to be the people that went on a journey. And we aren't historians. We wanted to kind of take the place of the listener in that sense.
You dig into some concepts that are part of our lives, things we, you know, live through every day and experience, and you take those things and you break them down. And a big one, I think, was your episode on the creation of race, where you were focusing on the work of Franz Boas, the father of anthropology. You come from an anthropology background as well. Let's take a listen.
European and American scientists were busy creating a whole new human classification system, a racial hierarchy based in pseudoscience that infected every part of academic and social life.
It would come to be known as eugenics.
In fact, the word itself, eugenics, is simply, you know, simply comes from the Greek to be well born. You know, if you know that you're going to be born into a family of criminals, or you're going to be born physically or mentally challenged in some way, wouldn't it be better, they said, simply never to have existed?
There were people who were basically trying to advance the idea that the white race was superior, right? We were realizing there's kind of eerie similarities to what we're going through today. And so the more we were thinking about that, the more we realize there's a lot we can actually gain from understanding that time, and also understanding that those kinds of ideas don't just disappear.
There is an episode that I was shocked by because, and embarrassed that I had no idea that this happened, which is the siege of Mecca. I'm a Muslim woman. I did not hear about this. And I have some ideas about why I never heard about this. Mm. You know, in school or in like Sunday Muslim school or like even in the Sudanese community, you do a lot of episodes about very American like institutions and concepts, right? The history of the Supreme Court, the Violence Against Women Act, James Baldwin, Billie Holiday. But then you also go international with this example of the siege of Mecca.
Around 100,000 pilgrims filled the courtyard, lined up in concentric circles, facing the Kaaba for Fajr prayer.
Just as the prayer ended, shots rang out.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba, and joining me are Rend Abdel Fattah and Ramtin Arablouei from the podcast Throughline, which is now airing on KALW. And that was a clip from their episode, The Siege of Mecca. So how do you decide what to choose internationally, right? Your program mostly is focused on the U.S., I think. A lot of your episodes are exploring very American kind of institutions and concepts, the Supreme Court, the Violence Against Women Act, where white nationalism came from, you know, even James Baldwin, Billie Holiday. But you also go international, and one example is this episode. When do you decide to go global and why?
I think we always envisioned it as sort of a balance, you know, that the show would be would kind of sit between, you know, U.S. history and global history, partly because, you know, the U.S. exists as a part of the world, right? And I think we actually, in a lot of American media, we lose sight of that, that, you know, the events happening here, one, don't affect just people here. They affect people, you know, around the world. And the events happening around the world also affect us here, right? And so some of our episodes, for example, like the history of the U.S.-North Korea relationship are trying to help us understand the kind of how the U.S. relates to another place or how it fits into another, to a conflict in another place. But then some episodes are focused on really, like the Kurds, for example. I mean, that's just helping us to understand an issue that is incredibly important for anyone who's like, who's a kind of a global citizen, right? Like, it's important for you to understand because it has repercussions that reverberate around the world and all of that. But it's also just important.
And then you have the stories like Bananas, right? Where you go, you really take something that is ubiquitous in our lives and you break it down. And it reminds me of this idea of like the real cost of your t-shirt or the real cost of your burger. And again, one of them is your episode on bananas. Let's take a listen.
Right now, bananas are so ubiquitous in our lives that we can't imagine life without them. But I don't think there was anything magical about the banana in and of itself that made it such an entrepreneurial success. I think it was a lot of luck, changing culture, brutality, people willing to practice that. And all these little pieces come together to create this market that probably never should have existed.
This is definitely one of my favorite episodes, again, because it takes something that I eat every day. I loved hearing that Ramtin feeds it to his son every day. And then you get into this complex history that's just so riveting.
Usually our exploration of an everyday object is dark. It ends up being really dark. Like, it doesn't really make you excited to eat a banana. You know what I mean? After you listen to it, you're like, oh, at least for me, after working on that episode with Run, I was kind of like, do I still want to give my son bananas? But it's, I think it's really trying to make sure that all of us as responsible citizens of the world understand what our everyday actions actually cost. I think that's a big reason we make the show. So we understand that that war that's happening in the Middle East, what are its consequences? Where did it come from? What role do we play in it? Because in order to be a responsible person living in this world, I think you need that information, at least to be able to make sound decisions. And I think that applies to geopolitics, and it also applies to fruit.
Podcasting has blown up. It's all about digital and on demand and binge listening. Why are you excited about being on broadcast radio?
There's just like this magic, you know, I mean, it sounds cheesy, but like a magic to like knowing that somebody could get in their car and accidentally, you know, listen to us. You know, they flip to their local NPR station and suddenly they're hearing something that they didn't expect. I don't know, something about that's really exciting. It's exciting to know that, you know, as more and more stations pick it up all across the country, you have people that, you know, might never click on it if they kind of like saw it on a rundown of kind of shows. They might not think to click on it, but then they kind of stumble into it, and then suddenly their sense of the world is a little bit bigger, and their understanding of it hopefully a little bit deeper.
Thank you very much, and we look forward to hearing you on our radio station.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. We're excited to be on KLW.
That's Rund Abdel-Fattah and Ramtin Arablouei. They are the hosts of the NPR podcast Throughline, which now airs on KLW Monday nights at 6 p.m. Before we leave you, here's some new music from a local artist. This is San Francisco band Deerhoof. Their latest album, Love Lore, came out in September.
Pulse fields, tractor beams, teleportation pods, anti-gravity sleds, tricorders, immortality drugs, colonies on Mars.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Scott Carroll, Sonia Narang, Marissa Ortega-Welch, and Lisa Ramreka. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shirin Hadin. Managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.